Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. Good evening. This is the Three Looney Tunes, and we're here in Juneau to give it all we've got.
Hello. I'm Looney.
Go ahead. Let's just get your voice. This is only a test.
Yeah, I'm Toonie.
Okay. Good morning. This is Rob Kosius, along with Mia Spear, welcoming you to Calendar Call. This is Rob Kosius, and our guest on Calendar Call this morning is newspaper publisher, editor, reporter, John Greeley. John, good morning, and what's happening in the newspaper world?
Well, funny you should ask, I just happened to start a newspaper. It's called the Alaska Advocate, and we're publishing weekly across the state, and I guess that's the reason you asked me here, isn't it?
Yeah, primarily one communications media to another. What is it that prompted you to go out and start your own newspaper? I know you've been with the AP before and you've done reporting work, but there's quite a difference between that and owning and operating your own newspaper. What made you do it?
Well, I've always wanted to, for one thing, and seemed like a good time. The state needs it. I needed it. Why not?
What are your objectives, your primary interest in starting this particular paper?
Well, as I said, it's kind of a dream I've always had of owning a newspaper, operating one. As far as particular objectives, I don't know. I guess it's to write the stories I wasn't able to write when I was working on a daily basis with the Associated Press.
Can you give us some examples?
Well, I don't know. We've had them in the first couple issues of the paper. The first issue of The Advocate was devoted in large part to Bob Atwood in the Anchorage Times. What the institution is, and who the man is, and how much he's worth, and what his conflicts of interest are, and what the Anchorage Times means to Alaska as far as an information medium. The second issue was the cover story was on the North Star Terminal murders. That hadn't been really explored in depth by the news media in Alaska. We scratched the surface on it and didn't do all we wanted to, but there'll be ample opportunity to do that in the future. Those kinds of stories. I got a column that I write and can kind of pour my soul out in that, and that's fun.
Would you call it basically investigative newspaper work that you're engaged in right now?
Well, I don't know. That's always kind of a redundant phrase, investigative reporter. All reporters are supposed to investigate before they put anything down on paper. But I guess we're looking at things that happen week to week and day to day, but a little more in perspective. And from that perspective, I guess you could call it deeper than most other publications in Alaska. I think we tend to get into the subjects more in more detail. But I guess it's also the other side of that coin is writing stories that other people aren't. And so far we've been able to do that. I don't know if we'll be able to carry it out every week, but as far as The Advocate goes, I guess you could call it investigative journalism, but again, that term's kind of relative.
Who is it that's working with you on the newspaper, and how are you set up around the state to get this paper out every week?
Okay, yeah. I'm the Juneau end of the operation. There's just me here. In Anchorage, where our main office is located, Howard Weaver, formerly with the Anchorage Daily News, very good reporter, won the Pulitzer Prize last May. He's working there with Roger Painter, who used to work for the AP and the Ketchikan Daily News, and was born and raised, like Howard, in Alaska. They're the main editorial staff there. We also have a new reporter called by the name of Cliff Groh, Jr. Cliff Groh, Senator Cliff Groh, former senator, his son. He is fresh out of school back east, Harvard, very good student, and a very knowledgeable person. He's also born and raised in Alaska. And our ad staff and our production staff, which amounts to three people total so far. In Fairbanks, we have three offices, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, and Andy Williams is formerly with the Anchorage Daily News, is a reporter there. And so there's six of us all total on the editorial staff.
Mia, you're being quiet over there on your side. What kind of questions do you have for John this morning?
Well, I was wondering what made the advocate decide on investigating certain things like Atwood or the North Star terminal murders? Why do you do that? Or do you have a reason you choose these stories? Or?
Well, there's a whole long list of stories that are just waiting around to be written. Atwood and the North Star terminal ones just happen to be the ones we got to first. I guess we picked them because they're of interest to a lot of people.
Who controls the policy on your paper as to which stories you proceed?
Well, it kind of happens each week. Right now, we're just in the beginning stages when this program is being recorded. We're just getting our third issue out, so I'm not sure if it's anything that's planned. We have a conference once a week, conference call, and we talk about, you know, at least once a week, and talk about what we think we can get in the next issue, and what we'd like to feature. As far as any direction, we try to help each other out. If we combine our forces on some stories, the Atwood story we all worked on. Since we're publishing each week now, it's a little more difficult to conspire on stories. We're spread out more, and I'm not sure exactly how it works or how it's going to work. We're separated by 1,000 miles or more, and writing for a pretty diverse market. So I'm not sure if there's any way I can answer that really, except it's happening, and I'm fairly pleased with it so far.
Could you characterize the publication that you're putting now philosophically? Liberal, conservative? Can you make that kind of a judgment about it at this point?
I guess all of us are young, and involved in this are all young of the liberal persuasion. The paper itself doesn't really have an editorial policy. We're not writing it like you'd see in a newspaper, a standard editorial. We all have columns, but we have guest opinion. So the section of the paper called advocacy is usually the double track, two pages on the inside, in which we let it rip. And it's a forum. Anybody can write, and some people have ideas, and some people have ideas but can't write. But it's pretty much on the editorial, on the news side of the paper. It just happens once a week. There's no real design to it.
All right, fair enough. Let's move for a minute from John Greeley, the newspaper man, owner, publisher, to John Greeley, the reporter, a man who knows his way around the Capitol very well. What's your opinion of what you're seeing going on this year?
Any particular area?
Anyone that you want to choose. We could talk about organization, I suppose.
Well, by the time this appears, that'll be kind of an old story. But the things that relate to organization that will be carrying on through the month of February and March and April and even in the next year are the factions that have built up in the two houses. A lot of them aren't evident now, but in the House, I'd say that. But in the Senate, there appears to be a pretty shaky coalition, from what I can tell so far. It's got some real squirrels, and it's got some among the three Democrats, the one over and formed the majority with the eight Republicans. It's a pretty flaky group, and it remains to be seen how they're going to stick together on some issues. As I understand it, and I'll have to look into it some more to find out if it's actually true, but the Senate organization was set up primarily on a spoil system that really doesn't breach any philosophical grounds. If the coalition, when I say that, I mean that Rader, the chairman, John Rader from Anchorage, not the chairman, but the president of the Senate, became president of the Senate while making a deal with the Republicans for so many committee chairmanships for so many Democrats. Now, if that's the only bind that he has, binding proposition with the Republicans, then the Senate is pretty much organized not in terms of a coalition, but of a philosophical majority, which Rader may have no control over. I don't think you're going to see the coalition voting as a bloc very often on important issues, important philosophical issues like you name it, everything from workman's comp to the capital move. there is a conservative voting bloc in the Senate, and it goes across the coalition lines. So it's going to be a hard thing to gauge what Senate organization means now or ever. As far as the House goes, though, I think they organized it on a different basis. That Hugh Malone, the Speaker, and the people who he conspired with to organize the House, principally Mike Miller and Terry Gardner, are of the same philosophical persuasion on most things, and I think they looked a little more for a consensus of ideas when they were organizing the House, not so much in just terms of bartering votes or buying bodies. That's an overview of what's happened so far.
What kind of impact do you think this kind of organization and situation that you've described has on the unicameral concept and the whole business of putting that before the people of the state of Alaska? Do you think this is a good example of something that could be avoided by unicameralism? Do you think the people can take it that way?
Well, I'm not sure if it has to be avoided. It's just the natural human process of any legislature, whether it's two houses or one, are going to have to organize themselves. They're going to have to organize a majority and a minority. Under the unicameral system, ideally, at least in my mind, there are different thoughts on this. I don't want to talk about unicameralism because basically it's pretty boring, I think. But if for unicameralism to work, the legislators would have to be elected on a nonpartisan basis. That is, if you've got the Republicans and Democrats and you've still basically got two houses. If you have a nonpartisan basis for electing people, the partisanship is eliminated, and it comes down to a basic philosophical split, which is you're going to have in any body, one house or two. And I don't think unicameralism will work unless that approach is taken. I don't think it'll change anything. And I forget what your question was. Did I answer it?
I think you've been through it all. I appreciate the answer also. Mia, again, you're sitting real quiet over there. What questions have you got?
Well, I wondered, what were the goals you had when you started the newspaper?
The goals? I guess the only personal goal I had is to be truthful and try to make a thing work and not embarrass myself.
And how are you going to make the thing work?
Well, we're scrambling for money now. Hopefully by the time this program appears, we won't be, but I doubt it. It's a pretty sizable investment, a lot more money than I'm ever used to dealing with as a low-paid reporter, and it's the first business venture I've ever had. So I can't tell you right now how it's going to work. We're in the process of building up our advertising, and I think that's the key to it all. And our subscriptions, we're counting on our subscribers to pay close to half our costs this year, and we hope by the end of 77 to have perhaps 4,000 or 5,000 subscribers, and at $25 a head, which is the year the yearly subscription rate, that amount to about $100,000. That'd pay close to half of what we expect to spend for the year, and the rest we hope to generate through advertising. So we're gonna have to borrow some down the line. We just don't have much collateral right now, so it's kind of up in the air.
But you think you're doing well? You can see this thing working?
Well, I've got good feelings right now. I'm not a businessman, so that's kind of hard for me to say with certain that, you know, that we're going to have so many dollars on X date. But I try to keep my expectations low, and so far the paper has met or exceeded them. So.
Okay, John, a few more questions. What about the major issues in this session? What do you think they're going to be?
Well, they're already upon us in a lot of respects. talk about in various areas, the Permanent Fund and Alaska Incorporated, what the governor is proposing is to give everybody checks from their oil wealth, and as I understand it, the basic premise behind Alaska Inc. is to get people more involved in government by giving them money and saying, look, this money is yours, it's from the oil money, we could take that money away from you and spend it on other things. Now, do you think we ought to do that? And you've got this money in hand, and people are going to react. If they have a check in hand, and the governor says, okay, we're going to take that away from you, how do you think about it? And that's a pretty intriguing idea. The legislature is going to have to wrestle with that and wrestle with its own sentiments towards the governor, who, by the way, played quite a role in the organization of the legislature, and I don't think he's made any enemies this time, or made any friends over that. The Permanent Fund, Alaska Inc., oil and gas taxes, the governor's got a big plan in, the legislature has a bill that was developed in tandem with that as far as franchise tax on the oil industry, a lot of money. It's probably not going to get through the Senate, where the coalition is pretty much anti-oil, as far as I can figure out. Anti-oil taxes. It's going to be a rough session for the proponents of new or heavier oil taxes. I think that in terms of the oil industry in general, there will be quite a movement afoot as far as the tanker laws. I still think that the law that they passed last year will get taken into court by the oil industry. The federal court in Washington State threw out Washington's tanker law, although it's still in effect, I guess, until it goes before the Supreme Court. I'm not sure the legal technicalities involved, but as I understand it, ARCO is quite upset about the Alaska's tanker law, and there'll probably be some movement as far as amending that, perhaps to accommodate some of the trends that seem to be coming out of the courts down below. And when you do that, you open it up to a lot of things. On the other hand, as I understand it, Hammond's got a bill in to increase liability or take the upper limit off liability for oil spills, and that'll be a real hassle too. Kachemak Bay, the governor's got $12 million in to pay for paying back for the leases that were declared invalid. And I guess that's about it on the oil front. Do you want to hear more about issues? I could go on forever, but
sure. Mia, how are we doing on time?
Just fine.
Got some more. John, let's hear some more.
Well, let me think. It's going to be a hell of a battle on the Capitol move. This is it as far as the legislature is coming down to. For since the thing passed in 1974, they pretty much farmed the problem out to other people. This is next year is the year the legislature is supposed to put the money on the ballot to pay for the Capitol move. How they're going to do that without actually studying what the new Capitol is going to look like, is an interesting question. I think they'll somehow manage to do it. I don't think the legislature has the wherewithal to make a definitive study on the Capitol move. So chances are they'll probably farm it out or hire another firm to do some detailed planning work on it. Perhaps turn it over to the governor and have him appoint another thing. Have him appoint another committee. I tend to doubt that they'll do that. But they'll set up some special forum for studying the Capitol move. I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced that the Capitol move issue is going to be in any kind of perspective by the time 78 rolls around. I'm not terribly optimistic that it will, that people will know what they're voting on.
What do you think Juneau should be doing at this point?
Juneau? You mean if they want to keep the Capitol?
Yeah, assuming most people down here do.
That's probably a relatively good assumption. Boy, I don't know. I guess there's a law on the books, and if Juno or its sympathizers outside of Juno want to get the law off the books, they better get another initiative on the ballot. That's all I can think of. The capital is going to hang around as long as that law is on the books.
Do you think an initiative is a realistic prospect at this time?
I don't know. The Kaplan was really a hard one to read. It's a hard one for politicians to read, evidenced by the legislature's lack of doing anything on it. And it's a tough one for political observers to read because it's a very emotional thing. It's a gut issue in Anchorage. It's a gut issue here in Juneau. And it's just really a flaky thing to deal with and write about.
The great Ridley. John, let's return to newspapers for a minute. What impact do you feel that your particular publication is going to have on the Alaska political scene?
Boy, I read a national survey somewhere some time ago which said that newspaper editorial endorsements sway less than 5% of the electorate. I don't think we're going to be endorsing anyone as far as how much we affect the political scene. I don't know if newspapers do that much. I think as far as the people who read them and are influenced by them, probably politicians are more influenced by them than the electorate. People usually place politicians right below reporters as far as the people they respect. I think we're around 19 and 20. So I don't know how much we really sway anybody. I think as far as the advocate goes, there's more political reporting experience amongst the six of us than there is in any other newspaper in the state, with the possible exception of Valbo Gregory in Nome, who's been watching the political process for many years as a newspaper reporter, and Bob Atwood, who's been writing for 40 years on the political scene in Anchorage. But I think that the advocate is a good percentage of our subscribers are lawyers and government officials and accountants and economists and researchers, people who are pretty much into the political scene or groupies thereof. And to that extent, it's read by people who make political decisions. So I guess we might. Hard to say.
Mia, how about questions from your side?
Oh, Rob, I think you've been doing a fine job.
Nobody wants to compliment me. That's all right. Go ahead.
We all love you. To know you is to love you, and you're doing a remarkably good job. A lot of skeptical people thought you couldn't do it, and here you are, into your third issue already. I think that's remarkably well, given all the possible things that could have gone wrong.
Well, can you tell us what's going to be in your third issue?
Well, it'll be out on the street by the time this program appears, but the cover story is on Alaska Inc., what it is and how much money people are going to expect if the thing is actually adopted. We have stories on, I did a piece on Bill Ray and where he is now and what happened to him on the way to his fall. We have a feature article on hang gliding off Mount McKinley. Some spectacular photos that were taken by a photographer who went along on the trip. That was last summer, but it's an interesting story nonetheless. Columns of opinion and fact and fiction. The standard features like we started in our second issue, a thing called the Survival Manual. The lead article in that under that category was how to beat the parking meters in Anchorage with everything from a nickel coated with saliva during the cold winter months to how to wrangle a plea bargain with the local attorney as far as which statutes to cite as far as the unconstitutionality of the parking tickets and stuff. You got me talking about the Survival Manual. I think it's one of the probably more interesting features in the paper. I noticed in the daily newspaper tonight that a poll taken by the governor's office showed that the vast majority of the people they talked to I didn't have any idea what their government was doing with their money, and didn't know where to go for services and that type of thing. And I think survival manual will get into that type of thing. If you've got a problem, this is how to take care of it. It's a kind of a handyman's column, and that isn't the right word, but it's a knowledge and news you can use, you know, and help yourself. We also have some standard features like a book review. I try to find an interesting book that relates to Alaska or it's about Alaska and it's not interesting, whatever the case. We have our columnists are among the best in the state. I don't include myself in that, but Alan Frank used to be a reporter for the Anchorage Daily News, is our columnist reporter from Washington, D.C. He's been back there for 3 or 4 years, and he's writing about Alaska from Washington and what's going on that affects us there. The name of his column is The U.S. and Us. You can't read him anywhere else except in Alaska Advocate, and he does a good job.
Okay, John, we're almost at the end of this morning's show, but before we go, you raised the issue. Whatever happened to Bill Ray?
Bill Ray, oh, he's still kicking around. He, from chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, he went to chairman of nothing, and got a lot of bad publicity on the way, and is sitting in a fairly precarious position right now, although Bill Ray has a lot of political chits that he can call on, and he knows that, and if, as he says it, there are still men of honor in the Alaska State Senate, he'll cash those chits in.
John Greeley, we want to thank you very much for being our guest this morning on Calendar Call. And now until tomorrow, this is Rob Kosius and Mia Spear saying good morning to you all.